You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
It lends an air of collegiality.
The world's most invested casual.
I'd get so far behind at work, and it would 100% be Arena's fault.
The velvet rope is just kind of clipped in front of me.
Hey, no matter what happens, somebody has to be the little spoon.
You have too much emotion in there, it invalidates your argument.
Ironic, considering its name.
I think it's made me a better person, and a lot of friends here locally have helped me with that. I'm so sorry I missed this.
This is just the stuff dreams are made of.
Oh, you brave soul, joining us in the holiday season for another episode of TryHards. I don't quite have the Santa hat out yet, but that's all right. These two guys are still being fitted for their elf and reindeer costume, respectively. I'll let you imagine which one would look better as which. I'm Sean Seacrease, he's Matt Hurley, and he's Brian Tibbetts. We get it started on the cast each week with What Are You Drinking? Brian, you just had a long road trip. What are you drinking after the holiday weekend?
I am drinking something from down south in Memphis, Tennessee. This is a brewery that I have drank stuff from before. Never had this particular beer. This is from Ghost River Brewing Company. I had the opportunity to taste the Ghost River Golden Ale this holiday season, and it is very, very good. Very malty, not too heavy. My dad and I were putting these back when he wasn't enjoying the 12-year-old Alberlor Scotch, which was very, very smoky. So having one of these at the ready was on the docket for this past weekend.
Matt, you were on a long road trip as well, although one that didn't seem as successful at the end of the story.
I barely drank a beer this weekend, much to my chagrin. And we actually took a 28-pack of Oktoberfest. Lauren decided Thursday night that she wanted to drink all the wine, four bottles. She did enough drinking for both of us. Tonight, I am washing all my sorrows away. Double fisting of an Oktoberfest and a Booker's 10-year-old bourbon. Somebody brought it a couple weeks ago when we had our Friendsgiving, and I got to say I like it.
Sounds absolutely delicious in the home of the hot brown. Here I'm convincing myself that it is indeed the holiday season. Of course, the weather has been so weird in the Midwest, it went and got all warm this weekend, which is going to lead to a failure by me a little bit later in the cast. So with the Christmas decorations going up and the tree being trimmed, the Leinenkugel's Snowdrift Vanilla Porter is what we have in the home office this evening for episode 79 of TryHards. Matt, what magic did you play while you were out and about on your walkabout?
Absolutely none. I have nothing to contribute this episode.
Brian, what magic did you play?
I had the opportunity to play a couple of maybe, what, four games against just this terrible Pox player. Yesterday it was just absolutely awful. I had no idea what he was doing. Kind of went 2-2 with Blue Red Delver. It was terrible. Sound familiar, Sean?
No, not at all.
I'm so sorry I missed this.
I classify myself as a reasonably skilled Pox player.
No. I'm totally joking. You are more than reasonably skilled on the Pox front. This was the only magic I got to play, and it was actually really nice hopping out of the car and being able to unload some things and jump on the cast with our hangout and get some legacy fired up. I thought it was just going to be you and me for a while, but thankfully Jose did pop on and had a great chat as we were kind of splitting our game.
Yeah, we'll touch on that in just a moment here. We actually have a Patreon raffle coming up in a moment. I didn't get to play any Magic this week either. Travel had me out of town for a lot of the week, and then it was the holiday as well. I suspect that played into quite a few people's holiday missing of Magic this week, but as I mentioned a moment ago, the weather did get warm, so I know one of you will be a little bit envious of everything I'm about to say, and the other one will be envious of 50% of what I'm about to say, because he was present for half of it. I did get to throw 36 holes of disc golf over the weekend.
Oh.
Yes, 18 of those with Matt, who played out of my bag since he didn't bring his own, and then played with the disc golf club on Saturday. Patreon, guys, we had a chance to hang out with our top-tier Patreon members over the holiday weekend. As Brian mentioned, thanks to Jose, he was able to nip by for a bit, had a drink with us, commented on some of our less than awesome plays as we were playing Blue Red Delver against Mono Black Pox. Jose actually introduced me to a new term, and it's the one that I know stands out for you as well. He called himself the world's most invested casual.
The world's most invested casual caused me to loon my complete line of thought as he said that. It was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And to clarify, we were in a discussion about legacy decks and what legacy deck that he should adopt. He is a vintage player. He's a standard player. He plays modern, but he'd never gotten into legacy. And so we were saying, well, you know, are you looking cost-wise barriers? Are you looking ease of play barriers, etc.? And that line just ruled the rest of my day. It was fantastic. So, Jose, hats off to you. I'm having another one just because of that.
He was sandbagging us a little bit, Brian, because as we were asking him about play style, you sort of suggested going at the format from a combo perspective for something different to start out. And so we got to talking about Storm, and he goes, huh, that might work out. Storm is what I play in Vintage. That's what he called himself.
The best slow roll of my weekend.
Oh, God, sure. That was absolutely amazing. So then we had a conversation about which format is it better in, because you obviously have Demonic Tutor and Yawgmoth's Will in Vintage plus the boxes, but you get to play the full four LEDs in Legacy, which you cannot do in Vintage. So I know in the Storm community there's actually some discussion about, relative to the format's power, which one it's actually better in. So, Jose, thanks for hanging out with us. We had a great time. We'll have more on when the December hangout's going to be coming up in the next couple of weeks. So that brings us up to this week's Patreon raffle. Matt, it's your turn, and you've got something pretty cool. I'll go ahead and get the rolling die ready as you tell us what this is.
One of the things that I've always kind of wanted to buy, and Wizards has recently discontinued, the Duels of Planeswalker board game. I did get the original, and I actually got two copies of it, one for myself and one for our patrons.
All right, Matt, this is an awfully generous gift. Let's see where it will be planeswalking to. Do you have the list of eligibles in front of you?
I do. It's 44.
All right, here we go. Let me get the official Tryhards randomizer, and 23. 23.
Joey, and I apologize if I'm beating up this last name, Ruckel, R-U-E-C-K-L.
Joey Ruckel, congratulations on picking up the Duels of the Planeswalker board game. Matt putting that up. I can't wait to see some of the cool stuff that we've got coming up at the end of the year here on the Tryhards raffle. Guys, that brings us up to this week's tournaments. We do have an email, and we'll get to that a little bit later in the show. I didn't want to spend too much time right here before we got to the hard-hitting coverage from GP Lyon. Yes, Team Sealed, 631 teams, a name that you'll recognize if you're a Legacy player, Thomas Enevoldsen, teamed up with Christopher Larson and Michael Bonde, and they picked up a 2-1 win in the finals over Marcus Hensing, Casper Nielsen, and Alexander Pasgard. Congratulations to the team of Enevoldsen. He's pretty renowned for his death and taxes game in Legacy. Larson and Bonde for their win over the weekend. The big thing, if you were a Danish, you were a winner, because that was the Danes showdown there in the finals. There are two big ones coming up this weekend, though, guys. The SCG Season 2 Invitational and the 2017 World Magic Cup. Brian, which one of these captures your imagination more, and which one are you going to find more interesting? Because they're both three-day tournaments beginning on Friday the 1st.
I've got to say that I'm really interested in the World Magic Cup, more so than Star City Games, and I can't say that that was the way it would have gone the last couple years, where I was watching a lot of coverage from Star City, keeping up on, you know, points leaders and things like that. I just have not done that much on the SCG Tour. The World Magic Cup, however, I think is just one of those culminations of all of the best parts of this game, where you have, you know, good friends, great players, countries, anytime that there's kind of countries involved and teams of that nature, kind of like the World Cup with soccer. It lends an air of collegiality and that level of competition you don't get at other places. However, I'm looking forward to both, honestly, and I hope I get to watch coverage of both.
Matt, whether it's the World Magic Cup, the Olympics, the World Cup of soccer, or the Quidditch World Cup, is that something that really captures your imagination? And which one of these do you think is going to be more valuable to players going forward? Because you do have teams in that Magic World Cup. They'll be playing Unified Standard and Team Sealed. So as much fun as it is to root for your country or whichever team you want to adopt for the weekend, the actual tech, I think, is probably going to end up coming out of the SCG Invitational.
The Invitational is really, really cool, but I really wish that that would kind of lead into the Player Championship like they had before, because that was a big thing that people shot for. But I'm looking forward to watching both of them, and you know, this weekend's going to be kind of a relaxing weekend after 4 days of travel, so I should be able to catch some of it on Twitch.
Yeah, Matt, you brought up something that I feel is something missing from the Magic calendar, and that was the SCG Players Championship. This was really a hallmark of the end of the year. It feels like it's missing from the calendar now. Matt, is there anything that you sort of missed from days gone by on that Magic calendar?
Obviously missed the legacy, especially the multi-day, multiple formats on tournaments. But I'd have to say that Player Championship is a big one. Financially, I understand why they don't do it. I mean, it was really an expensive thing, and maybe they weren't getting the ROI they wanted. I wish that they could have that back, because that was always, you know, nice to see, you know, this person needs to top eight this tournament to get into the Players Championship, and let's see who's going to go all the way.
Brian, is there anything you missed from the calendar from days of yore?
Well, they put one back on, which was Nationals, so I feel like that was kind of filling that little bit of hole in my heart that I had when that was taken away. I'm with Hurley. I think that the Players Championship from SCG was a way to kind of showcase the best of the best of the SCG Tour kind of year in and year out. And it really was that race to the end. And so there was those fight for points, no matter what the format and who was going to be able to fly and travel and, you know, get to the tournaments. And that just wasn't possible for some people every single weekend. And, you know, the points shifting here and there. And there was some drama there. That was kind of cool. So I am going to miss that. I find it interesting that they're, in addition to having the Invitational, they're having the Roanoke Open at the same time as the Invitational. So that seems kind of like the little brother to the Invitational.
Hey, no matter what happens, somebody has to be the little spoon. That's just how it works out. No matter which one you're going to take in this weekend or both, remember, both the 2017 World Magic Cup and the SCG Season 2 Invitational, 3-day tournaments. They'll be starting on Friday. Go Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. If you're looking for something special for your favorite Magic player this holiday season, maybe even if it's you, now's a good time if you want to invest in a BioBox. The BioBox holiday promotion, Matt has talked about this before, is now up and running. If your store is participating where you buy it, you'll get one of the treasure chest boxes to go with it, alternate art foil, two-faced card, two foil basics, four either mythic or rares from standard, and two foil standard playable cards for each box that you pick up. And guys, did you get a notification about your willingness to participate in the Arena Closed Beta? That begins coming up on Monday, December 4th. I got an email from Wizards basically saying, we'll be sending out invites soon. Pay attention to see if you're on the list. Breaking news, I'm never on the list. Brian?
Correct. Kind of right there with you. I kind of feel like either I'm one of those people who's never on the list, where I feel like, you know, the velvet rope is just kind of clipped in front of me. I can just watch people walking into the club where the cool kids are. Or I look around and I say, oh, we're all in this club. And so maybe it's just not going to happen. Maybe they're never going to roll it out. I don't know. But at this point, there's been so much hype. I feel like we're kind of on that downward slide where it's like, okay, if something doesn't happen soon, I'm just going to maybe not avidly click on that link if they finally send it.
Matt, you're used to having to go in side doors or back doors to get into popular places. Are you waiting for your side door invitation?
Oh, I would love to get that. I wouldn't get crap done for at least a week. I'd get so far behind at work, and it would 100% be Arena's fault.
Matt, you know there's an NDA that goes with that, right? So you couldn't just like play all day and then talk about it here on the cast.
That would be the hardest part. Like, it sounds strange, but I almost hope I don't get one, because it would require a lot of editing from you to say, you can't talk about that.
No, I would just forward your email to Wizards with an uncut episode of the show and let them know you were in violation.
And just say, where's my reward for this?
I would just say, coming up next week, episode 2 of Byhards, while Matt's in podcast prison, essentially, for WotC. Then we'd see if they would let you out of podcast prison after
yes.
that. If you get an invitation and you end up being part of it, we're not asking for secrets, but just send us a note, whether you like it, whether you don't, and we'll try and form our own version of a straw poll and see what's going on with that as the early days unfurl. Guys, we have an email from one of our new patrons that I wanted to get to this week, Avery Martin. Thank you, Avery. We mentioned him last week on the show. Sent us a note asking about deck choices. He says, guys, the modern deck I've been running is linked below. It's basically a Mardu land control deck. I knew Brian's ears would be up as soon as this email was forwarded. For this deck, I would love if you get a chance to give me your opinion on tool selection. What decks do you think I'll have a hard time against, and what's weak in the sideboard? As for Legacy, I've been slowly acquiring Scrublands and Wastelands with the goal of putting together the old Dead Guy Ale, the list that Jeff Hoogland used for the MTGO Legacy Challenge a few months ago. Dead Guy Ale, a well-known archetype in Legacy, though it's fallen out of paper popularity over the last few years. So my questions for Legacy are a little bit more broad. My experience in the format has been limited to playing fun junk combos like Cheerios and Belcher. This would be my first quote-unquote fair Legacy deck, and I picked it largely due to already having 90% of the cards. I don't know what the meta is for Legacy at large tournaments. I've only played in the occasional side event at GPs and my local stores. Do you think the deck I'm picking will actually have legs in its field? He said, as far as card availability, anything modern legal he already has in his collection, and his friend circle has the ability to hook him up with what he would need for Legacy as well. So, Brian, since he started with modern, I'll start with modern. Mardu Land Control. This sounds intriguing. What would you recommend to Avery as he starts to spread his wings a bit?
It's really, really interesting. I've always been a fan of the Flagstones of Trocare, which was in here. I've always been a fan, as has Sean, been a fan of the Nahiri Emrakul combo in more of a maybe a Jeskai control build. I've run a Mardu tokens list that has a lot of these same elements with Lingering Souls, Inquisition of Kozilek, Collective Brutality, the Sorum Salon Visitor, Gideon, things of that nature. So I really like where this is going. It seems a little bit all over the place, but hey, there's nothing wrong with that. Honestly, it's really kind of fun to see what's happening here. 24 lands seems about right. You're playing a more control deck. The 3 Ensnaring Bridge, I find odd. You may not want that just because you're not going to be able to empty your hand nearly as often as some other players will. It's just not going to let your big creatures attack through that. What I really like about this deck is the 8 Planeswalkers. Sean, a Johnny Vengeant, great. Chandra, Torch of Defiance is fantastic. 1 Gideon, 3 Lilies, a Nahiri, and a Sorum Salon Visitor. I may actually go up a little higher on the Sorum Salon Visitor. Not so sure you need 3 Lilies in this control deck, but hey, Lily does what Lily does, so I think that's great. I love the 4 Lightning Bolts. I love the 2 Kolaghan's Command, and the one card that just speaks to my heart is Boom Bust, the split card from Planar Chaos. That's fantastic. So you're onto something here. I would love to maybe sleeve this up at some point and see how it goes. I think you can probably, you're looking to play the mid-late game. Really try to avoid the really, really fast decks in modern. So I might want to say you're going to need some kind of fatal pushes in here just to take care of those early creature threats. Other than that, it looked really fun.
Yeah, this is a deck that, Avery, I only worry about it being a little bit fundamentally on the slow side, because your best planeswalker here for the game-winning opportunity is Nahiri, and her fundamental turn is the second turn after she's been in play. You play her, you plus her, she goes to 6, next turn to 8, and then the turn after that, you get to Flying Spaghetti Monster somebody, or at least that's the hope, if you can protect her. So your fundamental turn being that late in the game and not having the counter magic that a Jeskai Nahiri combo deck would have, that's the only thing that worries me a little bit about this. But do your testing, see how it goes, and this may be something, because with white, black, and red, the things that you are guaranteed, you have the best creature removal in the format, you also have the best hand disruption in the format. And those two things can go a long way once your planeswalkers get on board. Any two of these planeswalkers on the board at the same time will be nearly impossible for anything outside of Storm to kind of beat through at this point. Scapeshift, you can make an argument for that. Anything that ignores the battlefield is still going to be able to win through that. But if they're playing on the field, then it's going to be very difficult at that point. So just watch your fundamental turn and how you're interacting at that point. Matt, I'm going to throw the Legacy side of this to you to start with. Dead Guy Ale. You've played Legacy long enough. You're familiar with the archetype that he's talking about. Black, white, kill things, attack with EBT trigger effects. Is this a great place for someone to start with a quote-unquote fair Legacy deck, or would you point him in another direction?
So I like Dead Guy Ale. I played it for a while. Sean, you kind of gave me the crap about this one in the past about saying you can build any deck you want and you build Cheerios. I think you said that to me once, in fact.
More than once.
Avery, you're talking to the right person here. I do like Dead Guy Ale. It's a good start. I also think you could easily transition into any of the Nick Fit builds that aren't blue because they don't run any of the blue duels. And there's not a lot in Nick Fit that's super ridiculously expensive other than the duels and the fetches. But if you have all the modern stuff, then you should have all those fetches available. So I think your first foray may be quote-unquote competitive to go into a Nick Fit build. There's lots of guides and stuff on Reddit, and I hate pointing people towards Reddit, but there's some really good subreddits there on NickFit, and then there's some good Facebook groups as well. It's one of those decks you can tailor to your own needs, tailor to your local meta, and it's just kind of a fun deck. I have to say that Dead Guy Ale, I do like the Dead Guy Ale, and I think that's probably worth a spin, but those two kind of share enough of the land base that you could play either of those decks without a huge difference as far as what you're having to pick up. But I'm a huge fan of anybody that's willing to try to get into Legacy, and these are great starts.
Avery, as Matt was mentioning, if you want to detour off of this in Legacy with Dead Guy Ale, try Nick Fit. If you like putting creatures into play and using EBT triggers, and I'll be honest with you, you really only need one Bayou to play that deck if you already have the fetches, because Nick Fit wants to take advantage of its basic land ramp through things like Veteran Explorer and so forth. So one Bayou, you can get by with that and not really affect the fundamental way that the deck plays. So anything outside of that, if you wanted to stick with white and go with a different play experience, I think any of the Stoneblade decks would be fun to play as well, whether it's straight blue-white, whether it's Esper, whether it's four-color. If you like putting things into play and getting value off of it, but you want to play a different kind of control, add in the blue spells instead of just the hand disruption, any of the Stoneblade decks I think would be cool as well. Avery, thank you so much for the email. We appreciate that. And your other offer. You'll be hearing about Avery again coming up later in December. If you have an email you'd like to hit us with, please do so. TheTryHards3@gmail.com. The contact's always linked in the show notes. Avery, we appreciate you not only jumping on Patreon, but sending us the email as well. It's just about time to get in the elevator, but before we do that, Matt's had his finger on the pulse of a bit of a controversy that has been building online lately. Since I am largely absent from social media by choice, Matt, I want you to set this up and then walk us through a problem that the Magic community has been wrestling with.
As many of you may know, and this is we're semi-beating a dead horse here, Christine Sprenkel recently said that she's scaling back and possibly withdrawing from Magic cosplaying. The main reason for this has been targeted harassment and I would say a toxic environment, not to use other people's word, toxic environments. The professor at Tulane Community College did an amazing video. It's the 27th. I believe it was released on the 26th, just kind of explaining what we need to do to fix this. There was one particular person that I guess was kind of toxic to the community, and I don't want to go into too many details here, sent his followers after Christine, and because of this, she just couldn't take it anymore. And I mean, a lot of this involved, you know, sexual messages, sexual harassment. At one point, it was actually kind of, I guess it was in person as well, once or twice. Here's what I have to say about this. Saying, hey, we need Wizards to step in and, you know, make this community better. To be frank, I'm not sure what Wizards can do. I would love for them to be able to do something. If they come up with a novel approach to this, great. The best they can pretty much do is they can say if there's targeted harassment, report it, report it, report it. You know, if it's in person, report it, and that person can be banned, you know, or get their DCI number revoked and be banned from tournaments. Same way with the butt crack guy. If it's online, report it. You know, if they're making terrible YouTube videos on their channel, report it to YouTube because they will get taken off. And they will eventually, after enough strikes, they'll, you know, if they're being monetized because of this, because they're so toxic, it'll get taken off. That's about the best Wizards can do. From a personal standpoint, wouldn't say I got into it on Twitter, but I had discussion on Twitter with some people about it. I have to say that once you know the problem is they're saying the community is toxic, we need to fix it. That doesn't do anything. Remove emotion from it. because I fully think when you're trying to have a discussion about how to fix a problem, if you have too much emotion in there, it invalidates your argument. You know, it almost goes to such a polarizing effect that it doesn't, you don't come up with good solutions. If you remove that from it, you remove that emotion aspect, barrel down to it, and in this particular case, she was being disrespected. She was being disrespected because she's a cosplayer and also a woman. Nobody should be disrespecting anybody else in the magic community. Here's what it is. Respect everybody, guys. I'll put this back to a personal adage here. When I got back into the community, I've talked about this in the past kind of on some of the other shows. I've had more interaction with transgendered individuals, and I've had to, I would say, remove some comments from my vocabulary, and I think it's made me a better person, and a lot of friends here locally have helped me with that. So guys, it makes you a better person if you treat everyone with respect, and that's all you have to do. Treat everyone with respect. If you don't like something, you can voice your opinion. There is a very, very clear line between voicing my opinion and saying, actually directing hate and vitriol towards somebody. So don't do it. And if somebody is doing it, speak up. Please tell whoever your local community manager is, tell them, and then they can help to address it and say, look, we've had complaints. Here's what we need to do. Report, be respectful towards each other. And you know what? We wouldn't have this problem.
The only thing is, I was looking into this just a little bit, that I'll say is I love the fact that people want to take responsibility for the magic community as a whole. But remember, this is just a game. If you experience a situation that is harassment, that is stalking, that is outside the letter of the actual law, you can get the authorities involved. That might be the last thing that you want to do. But policing a community of voluntary participants within the sphere of a card game is much different than recognizing that we all have a life to live outside of that game. And when we feel threatened, or when we feel attacked, when we feel like we aren't safe, that is when you can get legitimate law enforcement involved in a situation. So just remember, there is life outside the card game, and you have other choices to make. Now, you might not want to take it that far. I'll leave it up to each individual person and the experience they have, obviously. But you do have, Brian, these recourses outside of just wizards, because from what I could gather in this situation, there's really nothing that a company that makes a game can do in this spot. If it's progressed to X level, that's where you would look for legal authorities.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Unfortunately, Wizards put out their statement, and I'm glad that they did so, you know, condemning the behavior that led to this, all behavior that leads to people leaving the community. I was happy to see so many people who jumped on Reddit, jumped on Twitter, condemning this behavior, supporting Christine Sprankle, and yet supporting her decision, because this has to have been a gut-wrenching decision for her, for a community that has valued her for so long and what she's brought to the game, etc. I'm still trying to wrap my head around this, and I think it's something those of us who didn't grow up in social media, we're still trying to find our way through this, and if just like me and Sean, as you've said, not being on it every day, it's really hard to understand just how many comments a lot of people are enduring on a daily basis. And I think it's very, very hard for us, mostly white males, to understand that those in the community who are not white males, what they have to undergo on a daily basis. And some people are thinking they're protecting their game, you know, the magic that they want to play. And it's from the youngsters, it's from the women, it's from the old guys, it's from whomever, people who are not like them. And I just do not understand that. If there's a Monopoly tournament, God forbid, somewhere, you know, are you going to walk into the room and kind of point at people and be like, those kind of people shouldn't be playing Monopoly? That's kind of how I view this. Why wouldn't you want more people to play the game we love? Why do you want to tear down people who want some part of this great game? Those who want to throw the door closed in the face of certain people, I've never understood it. Ever have I understood it, nor will I. And so I feel just kind of ill-equipped to deal with them, because my first thought is anger. and that's not good either. So, you know, we try to be the ambassador. We try to be the educated one. We try to be inclusive. So I just see this as a very, very sad day in Magic when this happens. And hopefully we will just get better as a whole moving forward.
I think when you have a situation like this, maybe your words don't live up to it. You can borrow words from somebody who is more well-equipped to handle it. So to quote the eternal philosophers Bill and Ted, just be excellent to each other. Wild Stallions forever. That's going to bring us up to this week's In the Elevator. Matt, you've got something nigh unthinkable in there with you. Are we going to be able to survive this?
Glimpse the Unthinkable. I hate calling this card because I really thought this would be a $5 card after Iconic Master. It is currently just floating under $10 from Iconic Masters. Iconic Masters as a draft format is kind of meh. The EV is kind of meh, so the prices have not dropped as hard as I thought they would. Box prices will eventually get down there. I think these are a great pickup. At about the $6 level, Glimpse will always be a casual favorite, and it'll always be $5.
Glimpse the Unthinkable in the Elevator this week. I'm going to give Brian a chance to push the buttons on the Elevator real quickly. I don't know anybody who likes this card as much as you do. Would you like to take a victory ride in the Elevator?
He's not allowed. Get him out of here.
What? No, 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 no. Glimpse was such a staple in so many ways when I was, you know, just learning how to play mill decks. So I love the fact that you chose Glimpse this week.
You know, financially, it's just a strange cat because it has almost zero competitive play, but it's so popular with the casuals. As a Magic player, a semi-tournament Magic player, everyone always loses sight of that. And then they're like, why is this dollar, you know, why is this a $10 card? Well, every casual ever wants Glimpse the Unthinkable.
Yeah, it's the power of the silent market, so to speak. The casual market exercising their will. Glimpse the Unthinkable, this week's In the Elevator. That brings us up to this week's 3 Minutes to Brew. Brian, I'm almost as excited about this as you were about In the Elevator.
Think of this week, everyone, as like a training exercise. Unstable is almost out, and you're going to have to be doing a lot of text box reading to figure out what these cards do. So I pulled something out of the past to get us used to reading text box. So I went all the way to the Alliances set and pulled out one of my favorite multicolored cards, which is Limduel's Paladin. For a red, a black, and two other, you can summon Paladin. A 0/3 creature with trample. During your upkeep, choose and discard a card from your hand or bury. Yes, bury Limduel's Paladin and draw a card. If any creatures are assigned to block it, Limduel's Paladin gets +6/+3 until end of turn. And if Limduel's Paladin attacks and is not blocked, it deals no damage to defending player this turn, and that player loses 4 life. Effects that prevent or redirect damage cannot be used to counter this loss of life. Guys, do you remember what card we were talking about? Yes, it's Limduel's Paladin. Where do you see this card, John? Is this going to make a massive comeback in Vintage or Legacy? Or wait, to make a comeback, it already had to be relevant. Well, anyway, 3 Minutes to Brew, Sean, Limduel's Paladin.
I don't think it ever comes out and makes a big splash in a competitive format, but when you look at the way this card is constructed, you know what I see? The template for a lot of cards that are very powerful today. This is a 4-drop that attacks for 4 or 6, depending on the choice that your opponent makes. It gives you the option to draw cards based on whether its utility is still worth keeping it around. And I've always said this, time will tell. This is the best card from Alliances, not Balduvian Horde. We got it wrong the first time around. On the downside, it dies to Lightning Bolt after your 4-mana investment, but you got to take some risks if you want the power of the Paladin. So I think this, when you see how it's formatted, the fact that it has Trample and it's a 0/3, you had some forward thinking, and some of the design architecture that went into this card is the way that we think about creatures today. So its legacy is actually, Brian, I think, alive and well.
Oh, I'm right there with you. I absolutely agree with you. Before I give you my hot take on Limduel's Paladin, I'm very, very curious to see what Hurley thinks.
I kind of wish this was a legendary creature so I could have it run as my terrible commander in, you know, one of my like random terrible EDH decks. I have actually played this card before. You know, and Sean, you hit on that. I don't like that's a 4-mana investment for an 0-3. You know, that's just too easy. It's just kind of too easy to kill. Does not die to Doomblade, guys. That's a big bonus. This is actually a card that I think if it was 3-mana, I do actually think it would see some Legacy play to help beat down the Gurmag Anglers of the World. I mean, having a 6-6 with Trample, it just seems bonkers. I think this is relegated kind of your casual. I do like it in EDH. If they reprinted this and they put this in Modern, it wouldn't be good enough. I think it would be a house in Standard, but you know they'll never reprint this in Standard. And Sean, I got to say, I can't believe you would even say that this is the best card in Alliances when you have Lord of Tressorhorn.
Matt, I'm glad you brought that up. I was remiss not to mention something, but it certainly has nothing to do with Lord of Tressorhorn and that penny card that many people have gotten the valuation wrong of over the years. It was the fact that the real drawback on Limdol's Paladin, yes, it doesn't die to Doomblade or Terror, but what it did die to was Swords to Plowshares, which was much more relevant at the time, and because its power is zero, unless they just had the absolute worst timing ever, you got nothing for your Limdol's Paladin, because it's a 0-3. So that was actually, I think, the bigger drawback.
I think you're right about that. The drawbacks are definitely real, but guys, don't you remember the card that I used to play with way back in the day, which was Tano's Wand? For a mere 4, you could bring out an artifact that gives any creature with power 2 or less unblockability, and then you could just swing in for 4 every turn. I mean, geez, this is just the stuff dreams are made of. This kind of goes to show you where my deck building choices were way back in the day when I'm trying to pair Tano's Wand with Limdul's Paladin.
When you said the card that I would be excited about, I thought Grindstone.
Ashnod Silex, perhaps? Feldegriff, perhaps?
All of these great things.
That's
3 minutes to brew this week on Tryhard's Limdol's Paladin. His DNA still leeching forward into modern cards today. Guys, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week? Brian, you're up.
It was great hanging out with Jose yesterday and kind of giving a little bit of a thought experiment to, you know, what kind of Legacy deck would I play if I had no ceiling of card availability and, you know, going into a format completely cold, even though he was, as we said, sandbagging us a little bit, knowing how to play Vintage Storm. That seems like a pretty obvious choice, but it did get me thinking about, hey, if I had no preconceptions about the format of Legacy, our favorite format, what deck would I play? And it got me thinking all afternoon, and I kind of like the idea of trying to just master a archetype like Storm, master an archetype like Manaless Dredge, to just kind of, you know, be that guy who's so good at it. That's the deck you have to worry about when you go to a tournament and you know that person's going to be there. So, Jose, thanks for the grindstone in my brain thinking for a little while yesterday.
Yeah, I have to say the same thing. Getting to blow the dust off my Pox deck, I hadn't even looked at that since Wizards changed the rule on Planeswalkers being legendary as opposed to unique, and now that's opened up some other deck building space. Also, from the challenge that I played in at EE, I really liked the one of Walking Ballista, so I've gone to a second Ballista, and now I have a full 6 Lilianas available to me in the deck, which also, Liliana the Last Hope, gives you 2 win conditions that are really overwhelming win conditions. And that's something that Pox really hasn't had access to without giving up something else in the main deck before. So far, to experiment with those, I've been cutting the Waste Knots. Ironic, considering its name. But it just doesn't impact the board enough unless you play the combo-style Pox deck with Waste Knot and Anvil. And I'm trying to get away from that version of it. I haven't liked it as much. So that opportunity to get out an archetype that's always near and dear to my heart, but not one that always is at the right competitive moment, was great this weekend. Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
So this business with Christine Sprankle made me reevaluate a lot of what I see and a lot of how I think. Like I said, I had some really good Twitter discussions. How much of this is happening behind the scenes? And so it's kind of maybe I discussed it a little bit with some of the family about what was going on and what is the proper way to cultivate a better community. And so I think moving forward, I've got a couple of little mental ideas, like little small things I'm going to try to do. And I hope to be able to make a better community. And even if I change one person's night and we get one more player out of it that's happy and that's accepted in the community, I feel like I've done it. I've done a great thing. So, I mean, I think that's the best thing. I hate seeing her leave, but at the same time, it, as your typical Magic player, white, I hate to say white male who has been playing a while, it made me think, hey, how much of this is going on behind the scenes? How much of this is not being reported? And what can I do to make it better?
No, you brave soul, hanging out with us for another episode of Try Hards. Hopefully your holiday season is off to a great start. We'll see you next week here on Try Hards.